Hey there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 275. What a fun number. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line, send an email on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com. Strolling over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is This Show Is So Gay. And of course, go to the Facebook, like us, because we sure as heck like you. What a fun show we have for you on this, our 275th episode. We must start with our first guest. Sarah Toche is an award-winning journalist who has interviewed and profiled many of the world's most influential players, ranging from high-level politicians to A-list celebrities to health experts to key civil rights advocates. She is the founder, the principal, the owner, and the editor-in-chief of the Seattle Lesbian, Seattle's only lesbian newspaper. Her writing has appeared in the Huffington Post's Gay Voices section, the Windy City Times, Curve Magazine, SheWired, just to name a few, and she has served as the managing editor of TheContributor.com. She was a contributor to the text Gay Press, Gay Power, The Growth of LGBT Newspaper in the United States, the book Black, Gifted, and Gay, and to the award-winning series AIDS at 30, and now she is here with us. Sarah, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Thank you so much. What a wonderful introduction.
And I left stuff out, Sarah.
That's quite all right. I think they can get it from there.
How the heck are ya?
I'm doing really great. Thanks so much for having me.
So much to talk about. Are you ready?
I think so.
My assumption is, we've spoken to so many of your journalist colleagues, my assumption is that you were the editor-in-chief of your high school's newspaper.
Well, actually it wasn't. But, you know, I was an overachiever because I actually got out of high school a little bit early. I graduated 6 months early and took a ton of extra classes so that I didn't have to be there anymore. So,
what were you in a rush to do?
Oh, like change the world, you know? I mean, like definitely in a rush to get out there and just start pounding the pavement, and got right to work and just haven't really stopped.
Yeah. No, and that's apparent from your bio and everything I left out. Let's try to trace your career a bit. You studied film and television at the New York Conservatory for the Dramatic Arts.
Yes.
What was that experience like for you?
That was pretty amazing, to be honest with you. I learned so much about myself and about humanity and just in general gay rights. I mean, getting off there and marching across the Brooklyn Bridge, I was there during 9/11, so
yeah.
It definitely was a very interesting time in New York history, but it was an interesting time in my history too, and I think just being out there and soaking it all in at such an early age was definitely a lot of fun and really beneficial to me as a journalist.
Yeah. There was nothing like it. I mean, I was in New York City at that time, too, and it's almost indescribable in a way of what it was like to be there at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Definitely. No, yeah, it is really indescribable. It's hard to imagine New York that way again because now it's so alive and vibrant again.
Right.
But back then it was definitely, it was hard.
Yeah. There,
but the good thing is that everyone band together.
Yeah.
People came together and actually helped each other out, and everyone was super nice, and I love New York. I'll always love New York.
Me too. Let's go back, Sarah. Let's go back together.
That'd be fun. I'd love that, actually. I would love that. Christmas time, it's the best.
Oh, the best. The best. Even as a gay Jew, I love Christmas time in New York. It's good times.
It's so nice to go ice skating and, you know, the pretzels on the street and the roasted nuts and everything. It's just really special.
But Seattle and Cleveland, they're fine too. We're fine, Sarah.
Yeah, we're okay, you know, I'm saying we're good, but, you know, there is something about New York, I have to admit.
I'm going to hang up right now and book a flight. I just want to go right now.
And I don't work for them either. So, you know, I can't say that I benefit from anyone going from this interview, but, you know, other than you'll have a good time.
We just want to pause here to remind our listeners that this week's episode is brought to you by the New York City Tourism Board, of which Sarah is the chair.
That's how rumors get started. So true. Oh my God.
So was there a point in your life when, like, was there a pivotal moment when you said, you know what, I am a writer, this is what I do?
Yeah, I mean, I've written since I was a little kid. I've always written. It's kind of my preferred method of communication in any respect. But I think definitely after moving out to Seattle and kind of getting into the the civil rights movement out here, I started to notice that things started coming easily for me. And I know this is going to sound crazy, but I felt like I was right where I was meant to be because things just fell into place.
Nice.
It just kind of, it was like one door closed and then, you know, five doors opened, that kind of situation. And it still kind of is like that for me. I have multiple balls going in the air at all times right now, but, I think just having that validation and knowing that you're on the right track and you're being given the right tools to be able to get things done that you feel passionate about just makes you feel energized and gets you in that place where you can be creative and continue, you know, going along that path that you're meant to be on.
Oh, it's so apparent in your writing. So apparent in your writing.
Well, thank you.
How would you describe the distinctive Sarah Toche interviewing style? What would you say your style is?
I'm very conversational. I really like to learn about the person themselves. I'm not necessarily, you know, it doesn't matter if it's an organization or if it's a large, you know, branded celebrity or whatever. I just want to sit down and learn about the person and what makes them tick. And I think anything that I want to hear about as a listener or as a reader, I ask those questions because so often it's the easy questions I get asked a lot of the time, but I actually like to go a little bit further and say, you know, what is it that you do in your downtime?
Yeah.
Tell me something I don't know about you. What would we be surprised to learn about you on a Saturday morning? What are you doing? You know, those types of questions. And that's my style. I really like to leave it open and let them answer. And if there's anything they want to add at the end, I love that because it really, I know that they're comfortable at that point and that they want to talk to me and they can get it going. So,
love it.
Yeah, just leaving space and letting people fill in the gaps.
Well, let's talk about some highlights. What was that first interview that you remember thinking, okay, I'm a little nervous here?
The only interview I've ever been really, really nervous about, to be honest with you, was with Lily Tomlin.
Oh my gosh, yes.
The first time I interviewed her because she, oh my God, what an idol growing up. And
yeah.
Also, she worked with my all-time favorite, like, idol when I was a kid, which was Bette Midler.
And I've
interviewed Bruce Valanche, you know, I've interviewed all these people around Bette, but I've never interviewed her. So for me, that's like the holy grail, you know. But I think too that sometimes I do get interviews kind of thrown at me now. So it's nice to have an interview out there that I haven't done that I'm excited about that could potentially happen one day because it gives me something to keep looking forward to.
Yeah.
But definitely Lily Tomlin was number one for me. She definitely made me nervous and for no reason because she was extremely, extremely nice and kind and talked to me for a good, you know, 45 minutes.
I would forget that I was doing an interview. I would just be like, no, you're Lily Tomlin and Bette Midler was your twin in that movie and that's all. I'd be distracted.
I actually did admit to her that I was a little bit nervous, and I said, I'm never nervous, but I will tell you, I'm very nervous.
Yeah.
She was just awesome.
Oh.
So, again, I just went back to being conversational and just having a chat with her and letting her talk to me about things that she was passionate about. I interviewed her then a couple years later, and yeah, by that point, yeah, you're still kind of nervous, but it's not so bad because now you've kind of demystified the whole thing.
Oh, so incredible.
You know.
Was there another one that you just felt like you walked away and said, oh my gosh, I just knocked that one out of the park?
Oh boy. Sometimes it's hard to know what people will respond to.
Yeah.
But I did just interview Sinead O'Connor.
Yes, you did.
And also Wanda Sykes. And the two of them, I think, were definitely interviews that I knew for sure people would enjoy because they were just themselves in this interview, or in these interviews. And they kind of just opened up and let me ask, although there were some questions I was not allowed to ask Sinead. But other than that, they opened up and just kind of let me get at them and kind of figure out how they ticked and all of that. So, yeah, I think I walked away knowing that those were pretty big interviews and that people would really respond to them, and they have. And that's been great.
Oh, they're both great. Sinead O'Connor, she's not bossy. She's the boss.
Exactly.
Love it.
Exactly. And how interesting that she comes off as being so powerful, okay?
Yeah.
And she's got the shaved head, and she's got just this power around her. And when you speak with her, she's extremely humble. And she even says that, you know, up until recently, she didn't realize that she was the boss. She felt like people around her that were working for her were her bosses. And to hear someone say that at her level of her career and her fame, it really does kind of show you that as women, especially, we're kind of ingrained to feel like we're not in control of our own destiny when we are the whole time.
I used her letter to Miley Cyrus, her open letter in class last year, and we had an amazing conversation about it.
Well, that's great.
Amazing.
I was not allowed to ask about that, by the
way. Yeah, I kind of felt like that was the topic.
Yeah. Well, there were a few, but that was one of them, you know, no mention of certain things in the past. And
okay.
Let's keep it current.
Okay.
I'm okay with.
That's fine.
I'm all about moving forward. Let's continue.
You know? I love it. Okay.
Very gracious.
Well, we have to talk about the Seattle lesbian. In my head, even when I say the Seattle lesbian, you just start smiling.
Well, the Seattle lesbian is definitely an awesome, awesome venture that kind of, again, I mean, it didn't fall into my lap, but I have to say it was, in a way, I feel like I was meant to run that thing. No one had done it before. No one had actually given a voice to the women in the community with such a way that we are doing. And everything kind of just was thrown into place for us. You know, we had really great media partners at the beginning, and I think partly because of the interviews I had done prior, people wanted to interview me about why I was doing it, and it just jumped off the page from there. And we've been going ever since, and we're almost 4 years now. October will be 4 years. It has a life of its own, and I'm kind of just here to facilitate it.
Again, listeners, we're here with Sarah Toche, award-winning journalist. Sarah, I don't even know what it means to found a newspaper.
It's a lot of work. Let's put it that way. It's not glamorous. I get to do a lot of fun and fancy things, but that's because at the end of the day, you know, you're working your butt off and people invite you to fun things, which is great. But at the end of the day, you know, it really comes down to the work and what it takes to get the news out there every day. Every day something's different. And obviously, in journalism, for all of us, it's definitely, you kind of fly by the seat of your pants. You can definitely have, like, stories that you have out there that you'll be promoting that week or whatever, but if something comes up, you just end up, you end up jumping on that and you go for it. So it definitely, really interesting. Really, really interesting. Every day is a new adventure.
Talk to me about the scene there in Seattle. I've never been. I get the sense it's a little damp there, and there perhaps is a coffee shop here and there.
Yes, lots of coffee shops. Although I would go back to New York again and say there are plenty there, too. But
can I just say, I'm a little worried that the Seattle Tourism Board is going to kick you off after this interview.
I know, but I'm from Connecticut, so what am I going to do? But you know what? I have to say, I definitely have promoted Seattle in my lifetime. So now I'm just missing my New York. But I will say, we've got a lot of great coffee shops. We've got a lot of great newspapers out here. We've got a lot of entertainment. There's always something to do. There's many festivals and different things going on all the time. The weather itself, believe it or not, one thing that is great about Seattle is, it rains, but you know what? It doesn't rain as much as it does in New York or the East Coast. It actually rains less. And the only downside, I would say, to the weather is that we don't have our beautiful summer as long as we could. When the summer comes on and the sun's out, it is the most beautiful city I've ever seen. And that's definitely something that keeps me here, for sure.
How would you describe the lesbian scene there?
Lesbian scene is very active, very diverse. We've got, you know, all different generations of lesbians doing their own thing out here. And we have one lesbian bar, which I wish we had more. But there is one, and it's doing great, and it's been around for a very long time and still a staple in the community. And then we've definitely got big things that are coming up for lesbians, like, for instance, not to plug something else.
Go for it.
We have Even Pacific Northwest, which is it's a travel women's weekend that I founded with Eden Pride Events and PQ Monthly. We're the producers of that event. And basically what we do is we get all the women from Seattle to go down to Seaside, Oregon, and we get the women from Portland to come join us. And we have a four-day weekend of fun excursions and tours and, you know, clamming on the beach and just a ton of fun.
Oh, you can plug things on this show. It just means you're excited about stuff. I love it.
Well, it's great to have something that the women can rally behind that isn't just a bar, you know?
Yeah.
And to me, that's important because it fosters community. And the only way that we get anywhere in this world is if we have community, in my opinion. So.
Absolutely. As you mentioned, you're coming up on year 4 there of the Seattle Lesbian. Were there some issues where you were thinking this is just not going to happen?
I think at the very beginning, advertising was hard for us because people didn't know that we existed, and then they learned about us, but they weren't sure they wanted to invest in us.
Yeah.
And that can be really hard, but I don't think I ever really thought throughout this time that I wanted to throw in the towel. I think that maybe other people around me were kind of worried because I was putting in so much work. My friends had seen, you know, you spend, you know, 10 hours a day working, you need a life, that type of situation.
Right.
But, I mean, it's definitely paid out, and it you know, our ad spots are full every month now. I can actually have freelancers work for me, and we've got college students that are learning from us and how we're doing it, and they're involved in the writing. And so it's been a great, great journey, especially this last year and a half. It's been really, really super fun.
Nice. And I know you just got back from a nice gathering of LGBT journalists in Chicago. Mm-hmm. That looked pretty inspiring.
It's very inspiring. And I actually got to meet a lot of people that I work with every day that I've never actually seen in person, which I thought was fantastic. You know, Tracy Baim runs Windy City Times, and she's a good friend and also just a really, really awesome inspiration to so many female journalists and journalists in general. I have to say, you know, she did the LGBT summit. She, along with Diane Anderson Minshull.
We love her.
Yeah. They both kind of band together and put together this really wonderful LGBT summit of journalists. And I was involved in that in the Future of Lesbian Media panel, which was very exciting and fun. And I'd do it again in a heartbeat if they asked, because I respect them so much.
Well, Diane was on the show a few months ago, and we talked about the landscape of LGBT journalism out there, you know, because it's a complex issue. It's very complex. You have folks who are calling themselves journalists who perhaps we don't all have the same shared definition. So I will ask you the question I asked her. How would you define a journalist at this point in our landscape?
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, that's a tough question.
Yeah.
I mean, I think being a journalist, you're either a journalist or you're not. It's very easy to sit there and blog about something that's going on. And I'm not saying that bloggers are not journalists, because many of them are.
Yeah.
But it's harder to kind of maneuver the rules of the road in journalism and the ever-changing landscape when you don't have a voice, I think.
Yeah.
I think that so many times, especially now with social media and everything going on, in the world and just in our community, especially like same-sex marriage right now and all of that, that whole movement is just, it has a life of its own. And I think that as a journalist, you know, you're constantly being challenged to be better and do better at what you're doing and to get out there and actually get the scoop on what's going on and not just kind of recycle the news. And I think that that makes a difference. If you're out there actually breaking the news, making the news, reporting on the news as it happens in your you know, world, whatever that is, then you're a journalist.
Yeah.
I also think that you don't have to necessarily be a college graduate to be a journalist anymore. And I think, I don't know, I may be challenged on that, but I do think that more and more, especially like I said with social media, more people are getting out there and starting their own brands and not necessarily doing it the way that everyone else did it in the past. They're creating their own way.
I had a student in class just this week. They had to bring in some primary online journalism sources, and one of them brought in, you know, we're not a salacious show or a mean show, so we won't name any names. Mm-hmm. We're brought in from one of those compendium sites, you know, the blog sites where they're not breaking the news and they're just pulling everything together. And the student was very confused that that wasn't a primary source, because it kind of looks like it. Like it, you know, you see the headline breaking news, and what they mean is breaking news that we pulled from another site. And I get a little frustrated by that.
Well, I have to admit, you know, if you're going to do that, you need to cite your sources.
Yeah.
You need to say, look, here's a link to the story that we're talking about. This is the link. So if you want to read more, as a journalist and as a young student going into journalism, you have to kind of really weed through all of it until you find the source and then go from there, because you can keep reporting on a story, but if they put a paragraph in the story that's incorrect and everyone else is just pulling from that incorrect story, that's how the media sort of gets into this tailspin of reporting inaccurate news. So going straight to the source, finding the names, the people that you need to speak with. And going from there is probably the best. It is. It's the best way to do it because you can't just rely on everyone else to get the news for you. You actually do have to get out there and do some work. And it is a lot of work at first, but once you get kind of a pattern down and you get a method of doing it, you start to see which sources are actually reliable and which aren't, who you can count on to kind of get you connected to the right people. And building relationships is so important in this industry. I couldn't tell you enough how many times I've had to go to another journalist and say, can you help me with this? I don't really quite understand this. Or can you cross-promote this for us to get this out there? You know, we do the same thing for them. So just not burning any bridges is super important and making sure that you understand that, look, you're not out here operating alone. You actually have a network of journalists that are out here doing the same thing as you. It's probably best to work with them versus against them.
Yeah. It was only recently that I learned about the phrase clickbait, and we talked about it with Diane and Chadwick Moore from The Advocate when he was on the show, and I have to tell you, it was heartbreaking to me that's a method. And what happened to journalism? That's not a thing. That can't be a thing. I was heartbroken when I really understood the concept.
Yeah. So. No, definitely. The thing is, you can't change the way things are going necessarily, but you can adjust to them, and you can continue to do the work that you do so well without kind of falling into those little traps. And I think that overall people respect really good journalism and really good reporting, and they will keep coming back if they see that they can respect and trust what you're putting out there. So definitely not being disheartened by how things are changing and the fast pace. You know, I noticed that even CNN sometimes, which I know CNN's not perfect either, but you kind of look to them as a trusted news source when you're out there in the middle of nowhere or whatever. And, or even a journalist. I mean, we look at CNN, like, did it break on CNN yet? Okay, did. Okay, great. So let's find out. But even they sometimes don't have a period at the end of their sentence or something is spelled incorrectly. And I look at that and I just get frustrated because I feel like we're trying to get things out there so quickly now that we're not really caring about the content.
Right.
And that kind of bothers me.
Yeah. No, I heard someone call it the other day, a journalism professor I was talking to called it the race to the click. And obviously a lot of things fall by the wayside in the race to the click. Well, we have to talk about your song selections for this week's episode. This is the part of the show, Sarah, where you tell our listening audience what some of your song selections say about Sarah Toche. It's a little self-analysis for our listeners. I feel yours are very appropriate.
I love so many songs. It's like impossible. But I will definitely do what I can here to help out.
Okay, I could not be more confident. And knowing your writing and even speaking to you for the last few minutes, I feel these could not be more appropriate. So we start out with the ubiquitous Pharrell song "Happy." What does Pharrell's "Happy" say about Sarah Toche?
Come on, doesn't that just make everyone feel happy? I just feel like there's so much in the world that is wrong and horrible. And the thing is to always in yourself remain confident and calm and collected and lead with your heart. You know, that's what it boils down to for me. I've been told in the past not to do that. But you know what? I got to tell you, it's never steered me wrong. I've always followed my heart and it's always led me to where I have to be. So I resonate with that song because of that reason. You know, be happy, be yourself, be in your own skin, and don't let anyone tell you differently.
There you go. There you go. And your other song selection that we'll play towards the end of the episode, what does Sarah Bareilles' Brave say about Sarah Toche?
Oh, you know, I know people get tired of these songs because they're played over and over again, but I'm a lyrics person, and I really listen to the lyrics in that song, and it's information and advice that I've given to people myself before. You know, be brave, get out there, do your thing. Don't let anyone tell you you can't do whatever it is you're doing. You mentioned Chicago earlier. At the end of the panel, I actually said to the audience, I said, you know, here's the thing. If something hasn't been done before, don't just sit there and ask, why hasn't it been done before? Go do it. What are you waiting for?
Right.
And so for me, that song speaks to being authentic. Again, leading with your heart, being brave, and just changing the way people see things.
I was not worried about your ability to navigate that segment. Not at all. What is coming up for you? What are you excited about coming up?
I'm really excited about, my God, there's so much. But some things I can't mention yet. But what I can mention is the Eden weekend that I mentioned earlier. I'm really excited about that. The Seattle Lesbian, of course, growing and growing and just getting huge right now. I'm really excited about that. I'm really excited about just getting out there and meeting new people and talking with them and figuring out what they want and what affects them. Also, just writing for the different outlets, Huffington Post, Curve. Really excited about those partnerships. The Windy City Times, of course. I've been working for them for a long time as a freelancer. There's just so many good things going on and just keeping it going and realizing that there's a reason why I work so hard, and that is so that I can reach so many people and get it out there, get that message of love and acceptance and peace out there. So that's what I'm excited about.
Well, let's close with a little learning annex with Sarah Toche. For all of our budding journalists out there who want to work specifically in gay media, what's that one piece of advice that you would give them? I know that everybody and anybody wants you to be their mentor, so those applications you can send right to Sarah. But what's that piece of advice that would really help them out?
You know what? The piece of advice is not to give up.
Yeah.
Because you know in your instinct and you have that moment where you know that this is what you're meant to be doing. And the thing is, go out there and just do it. Just do it even if no one's watching. Get comfortable in your own style and your own writing technique, in your own skin. And people will notice what you're doing and they'll pick you up. And just, and I mean that in the most, you know, non-sexual way. That
yes.
You up. But that too could happen. I have no idea. But get out there and just be authentic and don't give up.
There you go.
That's my best advice.
Love it. Well, folks, you can stroll on over to sarahtoche.com, sarahtoce.com to learn more about Sarah. You can, of course, go to theseattlelesbian.com and read all about the fun things happening there. My assumption is after this interview, the Seattle Lesbian will be relocating its offices to New York, so we'll keep you posted on that one. Sarah, I have to tell you, you know, I've been reading all of your writing and I've been following you for a number of years, and I'm just so inspired by the way that you interview people, the degree to which you make every single subject, every single person with whom you speak accessible to the rest of us is such an unbelievable talent, and it's so appreciated by all of us who follow everything that you do and who want to access these people, and you give us that window to do it, and it's really quite life-changing and really inspiring, Sarah.
You are so sweet. Thank you so much. I really appreciate hearing that feedback. So often you get lost in the work that you're doing and you don't really hear kind of how it's affecting others. So I really appreciate that. And I'll keep doing it for you guys.
That's what we want from you. We want you to keep doing it. Sarah, what an absolute pleasure.
Oh, such a joy to talk to you. Thank you so much.
All right, folks, and we are back with our next amazing guest. Robin Camille is a comedian, a singer, an author, an advice diva, and an entertainer in the truest sense of the word. She has a new song out called Let the Girl Go, Free Lolita, which we're going to talk all about. She hasn't been on the show in over a year and a half, and I'm thrilled to have her here. Robin, welcome back to This Show Is So Gay.
Hello, darling. How are you? I can't believe it's been over a year.
I lived in Vermont last time we chatted. I don't even live in that state anymore.
That's right. My goodness. Wow. Time flies. It'll be Christmas in a minute.
In a hot second, Robin. In a hot second.
Yes.
Well, I have to tell you, before we even get to your latest project, this is how my day went. I was actually listening to Dreamgirls before because, you know, I'm a gay white Jew from Jersey, and that's what we do. In Dreamgirls, they repeatedly call one of the characters the hardest working man in showbiz. And then I thought about you, and I really think that you are one of the hardest working women in show business.
Oh, well, thank you, darling. I should be a size 2, honey, but I guess it's all those stops that, for those cheese fries that get me, honey.
Talk to me about your work ethic, because it strikes me you're always working on a new project. What keeps you going?
Well, you know something, I have a very good work ethic, knock on wood, because my parents instilled in me a long time ago that you have to work hard. Don't expect people to give you anything.
Yeah.
You're not entitled to anything. You get what you work for. And hard work always pays off. So I have a very good work ethic. The other thing, too, for many years prior to me focusing more heavily on my creative stuff, I was in the sales industry. I was in advertising. So I was on commission only. I worked on commission only for 10 years. So if I didn't bust my hump, guess what? Robin didn't eat. And
yeah.
Robin likes to eat.
There you go.
Okay?
Yeah. I would have said that about you. I would have said, Robin Camille, she can sell.
Thank you, darling. Yes. Yes. Because, you know, the world is full of stuff to sell, honey.
Yeah.
And the thing of it is, that training was very, very significant, and it's helped me in my creative endeavors.
Nice. Nice. Well, your latest project, before we even get into specifics, you know, it is a social justice project, and this is by far not the first social justice project in which you have been involved. What do you look for, generally, before you get involved with a particular cause?
Well, you know something, honey? I don't look for anything specifically.
Yeah.
I mean, I just go with my spirit. You know, if I feel something moves me and you know, something says to me, Robin, you need to do something or you need to hop in here, then that's what I do. It may be something very insignificant, may be something that no one really cares about at the moment, but that's okay. As long as it moves me, I jump in.
There you go. There you go. All right, well, let's talk about it. For people who do not know, who is Lolita?
Lolita is an orca, better known as what people call killer whales, even though they don't kill people, from Washington State. She was captured in 1970.
Wow.
By some men who got caught up in a dragnet, and she was actually taken from her family and sold to a marine park.
Wow.
Yes.
How did she come to your attention?
Well, actually, I had actually seen a public service announcement called Save Lolita that was produced and directed by amazing filmmaker Dan Azarian at a film festival, at a wildlife film festival. And I'm sitting there watching this, and I'm like, oh, my God, what got me with watching this is that I immediately thought about the American slave trade, the Atlantic slave trade, because the similarities were so striking. I mean, here you have an infant being ripped from its mother's arms, taken by men, white men at the time, okay, who sold this baby to someone for their profit. So the similarities are, like, so striking.
Yeah. And then what made you think, you know what, I'm going to write a song about it?
Well, you know something, people, you know, you can get on your soapbox and preach to people.
Right.
But sometimes people don't listen to that because nobody likes to be preached to.
No.
But if you put it in a song, okay, and they can dance to it, and while they're dancing and bobbing their heads, they're listening to the message, it gets through better. Because if you recall, we as a country and even in Europe around the world, no one was really paying attention to the apartheid system and Nelson Mandela's plight until you had those American musicians who put together the I Ain't Gonna Play Sun City music video. And then it started airing on MTV, and everyone's like, oh, my God, apartheid. We didn't know this was going on. And that is what sparked the Free Mandela movement.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's why it's important sometimes to, as Mary Poppins says, take your medicine with a spoonful of sugar.
Sorry, I was just having a flashback to a time when MTV used to play videos. It was a good time.
Yes, it was, darling. Yes, it was. Yes, many moons ago, darling. I'm dating myself.
I'm right there next to you. I'm right there next to you. Well, this has been very much in the news for folks who have not seen the movie Blackfish, which I certainly have. I watched it with some of my students last year. That's quite an effective movie, is it not?
Yes, it is. It is very effective because it brings to light the plight of these animals, because many people take their families to zoos and marine parks, and they bring their children to see the animals. And these families are not bad people. They just have no idea about the process that got that animal from its natural habitat into that marine park.
Right.
Yes, they don't know the ugly history.
There's been all that blowback with SeaWorld, and certainly you hear anecdotally, you know, with some information out there that their ticket sales have gone down, and then recently they had their whole response that said, no, we're increasing the size. It didn't feel adequate, though, did it?
No, I mean, at the end of the day, increasing the tank size is really not enough. I mean, it's supposed to be, I believe the tank size is supposed to be 80 feet, which is a standard that's been set by the Animal Welfare Act, which is regulated by the USDA. But the thing of it is that these animals are still being held in captivity. You still stole them from their home. So it really doesn't change the history and the ugliness of it.
Yeah.
And you're still making money off these animals, mammals, who are being held in captivity.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Yes.
You watch the documentary, and there's another one too, Dolphin Cove, which I was watching along with Blackfish, and you're just kind of thinking, this can't really have happened, because if everyone knew this, we wouldn't go. But there's that part where everybody really doesn't know the history there.
No, they don't. And that's why projects like Blackfish and Let Lolita Go, the Song Project, is so important, because it makes people aware. Because like I said, you know, when families are taking their children to these marine parks, they're not bad people. So, you know, you can't fault them. They just don't know. But if they knew, I think they would make some educated decisions about how they spent their money. And the other thing, too, is that if families have the money, the plane fare, the gas money to go to SeaWorld or the Miami Seaquarium where Miss Lolita is currently being held, then you can take that money and have a family trip, plan a family trip to Washington State to see those whales, those orcas, in their natural habitat.
Yeah.
They have whale watching tours. You can get on the boats and see them in their natural habitat. You know, no one's being ripped away from their family. You go home and have dinner with your family, and they can do the same.
And you can get a churro anywhere else.
Yeah.
You don't have to get it at SeaWorld. I heard they have good churros. That's what someone told me about SeaWorld. It's very depressing to see the animals, but good churros.
Yes, honey. It's really a hot mess.
Oh my gosh. So, say there's a government person who hears your song and then they get involved and they free Lolita. We got to start with the first question of how would Lolita do outside of captivity after all this time?
Well, the thing of this, that's a major issue with many people, because you do have some politicians who are and government officials who are getting involved in this. As I said, Blackfish did wonders to raise awareness.
Yeah.
And one of the things that they proposed is, for future generations, let's stop this capturing of these animals and bringing them to these marine parks and holding them in captivity. But the ones who are there, they've been there so long, so let's just leave them there. And I have to tell people, I thank God every night that Abraham Lincoln didn't think that way when he was freeing the slaves.
Right.
Okay? If he had said, Uncle Moses has been there so long, just let him live his time out there. We won't free him, but for future generations. So, you know, I really don't agree with that argument. Now, back to Lolita. The Orca Network is a non-for-profit organization based in Washington State that has developed a retirement plan for her. And what it involves is removing her from the Miami Seaquarium, bringing her back to Washington State, and having her being maintained in a 900-foot bay.
Okay.
She'll be fed by humans, she'll be cared for by humans, and they will try to reintroduce her into the wild, and hopefully she will be able to reunite with her family. If that does not happen, then she will remain in that bay and be cared for by humans. And we hope that she would be able to be reunited with her family, but it has been 44 years since she's been held in captivity. And if for some reason she's not reunited with them, those conditions in that 900-foot bay or certainly will be more humane than the tank that she's living in. The tank that she's living in now is only 35 feet.
Yeah.
Now, can you imagine going from an ocean to a tank that's 35 feet?
Jeez.
Oh, yes. And the other thing, too, Ken, they actually drug these animals to keep them sedated.
Wow.
That's the other thing. So it's really an ugly thing. So we're trying to free Miss Lolita, bring awareness to her plight, other people's plight. The other thing too, a portion of all proceeds from the song actually go and are being donated to the Orca Network, so they can raise funds for that retirement plan. Because I'm a black woman, honey, I can tell you, freedom ain't free.
No.
So once we get her out of there, we have to be able to get that bay constructed and orchestrate everything for her release.
I would say that after, so many years of doing this show, I'm pretty good at doing this, but I got to be very honest with you. There's a part of me that can barely hear you right now because I can't wrap my mind around the number 44 years.
Yes, yes, yes. That's a long time.
It's a long time.
It's a long time, honey. It's a long time. And the other thing, too, I mean, you know, it's a long time when you think about it, but then think about, and here's another parallel, the American slave trade in the South. I mean, some people, honey, they never got freedom.
Yeah.
They were on those plantations from birth to from the cradle to the grave, and sometimes that was 70 years, sometimes it was 80 or 90, if they lasted that long. So, that's why it's such an ugly thing to have someone take you from your home. I don't know where they think they got the right to do that from, but they do, the arrogance that they have, and just sell you for their own profit. So it's a very ugly thing, and we're trying to raise awareness, stop it. Don't support these organizations like SeaWorld and Miami Seaquarium who do this. There are other ways for you and your children to see these animals and enjoy them. If you're saving up for a trip to go to Washington State, watch those hours of good programming on the Animal Planet. What's the other one? Geo. National Geographic Channel. I mean, you can watch that until you save enough money, but do not support these parks where they're mistreating these animals and holding them in captivity.
I mean, if you take my age plus your age and double it, it's still not 44 years. It's a long time.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
It's a long time, honey.
Well, our listeners, I think in particular, look, what we've been doing on the show for so many years is just talking about voice, and it's all about how do we give voice to those individuals who don't have a voice, and if we're not broadening that to life forms who don't have a voice, I don't know what the heck we're doing. And Lolita does not have a voice right now.
No, she doesn't have a voice. And the other thing, too, I mean, you have people who enjoy and are pet lovers. They love their domestic pets, their domestic animals, their dogs, their cats, their birds. But they may not be as active in animals who are not domesticated or not in their homes. And I think it's important that they get involved. I think it's important that we all get involved. And what people have to remember, and this is something that made the connection for me all the more stronger, is that when the slaves were brought to the shores of America, we were not considered human.
Right.
So, I believe that the Three-Fifths Act, which states that five slaves are the equivalent of three white men,
right,
is still on the books. I don't believe anyone got that off. We don't adhere to it anymore, but it's still on the books. And that was because the Southern Democrats wanted that, so they could increase their representation in the House. But so when we first came here, the slave masters actually branded the slaves as they did their horses and cows and other cattle, because some slave owners would steal slaves. So the slaves got branded just like animals. So we weren't considered human. So I think it's important that we also make that connection.
Yeah.
And again, no one has the right to take any of God's creatures and treat them in this manner.
No.
No, no.
Well, I'm all about what can people actually do. I mean, I don't want to walk away from this and say, yes, this is the latest dance track that we want people grooving to at the clubs. We want people to actually do something after they hear your song. What should they do? So they should go to Washington. They should stop going to these parks and supporting them, because, my gosh, do our dollars convince these parks that they're doing something okay? What else can we do?
Well, after they finish dancing and shaking their booty, honey, and wiping the sweat from their brow,
yes,
they can actually go to CD Baby or iTunes or Amazon.com and buy the track. It's only 99 cents. And as I said, a portion of the proceeds from all sales go to the Orca Network to support Lolita's retirement plan. So that's what they can do. For 99 cents, they can help Lolita go free.
And we will link to that. I bought it this morning. Everybody else needs to buy it. What's going on with you? You got some exciting things coming up, do you not?
Oh, yes, darling. And, you know, in addition to working on this project for Miss Lolita, I was named this summer, I was actually named the official advice diva for DNA Magazine.
Nice.
Yes, yes. So I have a new column there in the magazine called Dear Diva. Well, I'm helping the Aussie boys with their drama, honey, okay? Yes. So that's a lot of fun, honey. And it's so much fun. I've always admired DNA Magazine because it was always so artistic and the photographs of the men were so beautiful. So, yes, darling, good advice, gorgeous asses, you can't go wrong.
No, that's really, it's like a recipe for life.
That's right, darling, that's right. And then next month, in October, I'm actually going to be starring in the off-Broadway sensation My Big Gay Italian Wedding. So that's happening as well. So that's going to be a whole lot of fun.
That play is like a juggernaut. I feel like I saw that back in maybe 2001.
You probably did, honey, and it's still going strong.
Look at that. Do you know your lines yet?
Oh, no, darling. I don't know my lines yet. Oh, honey, no, I don't know my lines yet. I have to sit down with the script and shot of tequila. I'll get it together, though. You know me.
I love it. I love it. All right, well, everybody's going to stroll on over to iTunes, and they're going to download the song. What else? Where else should they go to follow everything that you're doing?
Well, you know something, they can also go to our website, letlolitago.com. They can also follow the movement on Twitter at letlolitago. That's our Twitter handle. And PETA actually...
I was just going to get to that.
Yes. So PETA has been very supportive. PETA actually tweeted the video and encouraged all of their followers on Twitter to watch the video. So we're very excited about that and thankful to them for coming on board and supporting this.
I would imagine you've gotten a number of other just great responses to your doing this. It's really a different way of, again, giving voice.
Yes, it is. And, you know, it's the same thing with issues concerning children, other animals, the elderly. These are people and mammals who, you know, to someone who has a sadistic nature, feels that they can take advantage of. And if we continue to turn a blind eye, it will continue to happen.
Yeah.
And we can't do that because sometimes, you know, you can say, well, you know, I why should I be concerned about, you know, a whale? Sometimes I know everyone's dealing with a lot of things, the economy, the Middle East is on fire. But sometimes when you can step outside of yourself and offer some assistance to someone else who's in a bad way, the universe has a way of sending that back to you tenfold.
Yeah.
It also allows you to see and it reminds you of the power that you really have, because sometimes when we get so bogged down in our own bull and our own issues, we feel powerless we feel that we are too weak. We can't change our own situation. But when you can help someone else and lift them up, that lets you know that you have the power to lift yourself up.
Right. And I think it's so important, and I think you do such a great job of reminding everyone of this, is that it's important to do it in a way that's authentic to you. You know, like, I'm not going to go out there and write a song or do a dance because that's not what I do. You know, you're not going to go out there. Well, I think you do everything, so I don't know what you're not going to do. But that there are so many different ways to authentically use your voice, and the crime is sitting there and saying, yes, I have something to say, but then not figuring out your own way to do it.
Right. Right. And it can be something small, insignificant, whatever. Whether it be, you know, buying the song to support Lolita, writing a letter to, you know, someone in your government, your local government, if you happen to have a marine park in your state or city. This simple things. But do something, because when people do nothing, bad things happen.
Yeah. And by the way, music video over on YouTube.
Oh, yes, that's right. That's right. The music video is over on YouTube. Let the Girl Go, Free Lolita. So you can go on over to YouTube and check that out. And, you know, just spread the word. Spread the word.
I feel like you did it in one take.
Well, I think I sort of did. See what tequila can do for you?
Oh, my gosh. Can I just say, it's like a dream of mine to do tequila shots with you. Other people have more lofty dreams, but that one's pretty big for me.
I know, darling, I know. And you know something? I have a friend who, because usually I was not a big fan of tequila shots. But
okay.
One of my friends instructed me how to do it. He said, take your tequila shot and then wash it down with some pineapple juice.
Okay.
And that works for me.
All right.
Yes, darling, yes. And then all these creative ideas just start to flow.
I want to remind everyone that next week, anybody who can hear this interview, we're all gathering in New York City to do tequila shots with Robin Camille.
Oh my goodness, what a blast. Yes.
Well, look, you know, if people are in it for the thanks, they're doing it for the wrong reasons, and it's pretty difficult to get the thanks when you are giving voice to a population without a voice, and I know that's not why you're doing this. So on behalf of...
No, honey.
Yeah.
No, because the other thing, like I said, when you help others, you don't have to worry about where a thank you. You know, the universe will give back, and that's called karma.
Right, but let me just say, on behalf of countless communities, because this really will open a lot of ears, and it will open a lot of eyes, and hopefully it will get some pens writing and some voices talking and maybe a little shouting, because a little shouting's okay. On behalf of all those communities, I'm going to go ahead and thank you, Robin. It's such a great thing that you're doing.
Well, thank you, Ken, and it is always a pleasure talking to you, honey.
Until the next time.
She was taken from her home over 40 years ago and brought to the shores of Florida, where she has been held captive. Her freedom was stolen like that of my great-great-grandparents, who were forced to work on the slave plantations of North Carolina. Slavery was not abolished for all of God's creatures. Lolita lives on a modern-day plantation in Florida, the Miami Sea Quarry. She is used like a freak in a circus sideshow.
All right, folks, we really are at the end of this episode number 275. We can sneak in a couple very quick stories that just caught my eye. A couple who have rented their upstate New York farm out for weddings have decided to stop hosting marriage ceremonies altogether after being fined for refusing to allow a same-sex couple to marry at the venue. Last month, a New York judge ruled that Cynthia and Robert Gifford, owners of Liberty Ridge Farm near Albany, violated state anti-discrimination law by refusing to accommodate the wedding of a Newark, New Jersey couple. So instead, the Giffords have decided not to host any weddings on their property at all. They're going to take their toys, they're going to leave the sandbox, and they're going to go home. So that's their decision. An update on Michael Sam. So Michael Sam was let go of the St. Louis Rams 53-man roster. He was not put on their practice squad. There was a lot of speculation out there
on, oh gosh, is another team going to pick him up or not? And then there was that interesting piece, this is part of heterosexual privilege, where any number of people are let go from teams and it's not questioned if it's due to their sexual orientation. But with Michael Sam, all the speculation out there was, is this because he's not good enough or is this because he's gay? That would be heterosexual privilege right there. Well, the ending right now, right the second on the story, is that the Dallas Cowboys have signed Michael Sam to their practice team. By making the practice squad, it puts him one step closer to being potentially named to a full roster in the event that someone on the team is injured or underperforming. So we will see what happens with Michael Sam. But again, heterosexual privilege. And finally, for your marriage equality update of the week, a federal judge has just interrupted equality advocates' winning streak in the courts by upholding the Louisiana state constitution's ban on same-sex marriage. U.S. District Court Judge Martin Feldman's ruling makes him the first federal judge to uphold the state's ban on same-sex marriage after the Supreme Court's landmark ruling striking down a key provision of the Defense of Marriage Act in June 2013 through that famous Windsor versus U.S. case. Unlike every other federal judge who has considered the issue in the past year, Judge Feldman determined that Louisiana's ban on same-sex marriage, approved by 78% of voters 10 years ago as a constitutional amendment, is rationally related to the state's legitimate interest in linking children to a, quote, intact family formed by their two biological parents, end quote. BuzzFeed noted that Judge Feldman's decision seems aware of its peculiar place in recent judicial history, while also acknowledging that this decision from the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of Louisiana is nowhere near the final verdict on marriage equality in Louisiana or nationwide. Judge Feldman wrote this in his decision, quote, many other courts will have an opportunity to take up the issue of same-sex marriage, including courts of appeals, and at some point the U.S. Supreme Court. The decision of this court is but one studied decision among many. So a bit of a setback there in Louisiana, breaking with the string of marriage equality victories. This judge has said, no, no, we have to keep families intact. And that's a legal ruling, apparently, in Louisiana. That's it for this week's show. Get out there and go get informed. We get a lot of our news from advocate.com. So all of our news this week was supplied by them. But there's so many other ways to get your news. If you get it from us, that's great too. But we only cover brief snippets of the news. So be informed. Be informed about what's going on out there. And of course, use your voice. We had two amazing guests this week using their voices in just incredible ways. Our thanks to Sarah Toche, who's doing such incredible work there in the Pacific Northwest and also just around the country because we're all reading her writing. And of course, to our buddy Robin Camille, what a treat to have her back on the show. Please, please go download that song on iTunes because we would like to set Lolita free. That is a fellow life form on this planet who has been enslaved for the past 44 years. And so let's try to do something about it. You guys get out there, use your voice the way you know how to use it best to make a difference for your LGBT and ally brothers and sisters. And of course, while you're using your voice, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay? You can be amazing, you can turn a phrase into a weapon or a drug. You can be the outcast to be the backlash of somebody's lack of love. Or you can start speaking up. Nothing's gonna hurt you.